That lady talking to you over there, man. She about ready to start.
Blog Talk Radio.
What's wrong with the world, mama? People living like they ain't got no mama. I think the whole world's addicted to the drama. Only attracted to things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terror. To discriminate and to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get outraged. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurt and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach and what you turn the other cheek?
Chemical gas is filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering. As the youth are young, so ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I can ask myself, really what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them dividends. Not respecting each other, denies our brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on.
I don't know.
What's the truth, y'all? Come on.
Love,
y'all. Hey, I'd like to say good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Brothers for Real radio show. My name is Leon Gatewood. I'll be your host for the evening. I do have a couple of other brothers on the show with me. I have Robert and Joseph. Say hello to me, Robert and Joseph. Make sure you
listen. Hey. Sup?
Hello, Leon. Yeah, Leon.
Hey,
hello,
man.
Joe.
Leon.
Hello, brother. Yes, sir.
Leon, what you doing? What you doing in my chair, man?
Hey, man, look. Hey, I don't know how to say it, man. I don't know. I don't know what to say, man. Don't put me in the spot like that. That question wasn't on the script.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. Let me stick to the script, man.
Oh, you got
a
script,
man. Yeah, man, we
that's
got a spirit,
right,
Robin.
Oh, what you doing in the ship?
Yo.
Where you been, man?
Where have I been?
Yes, sir.
Man,
we haven't seen you in a while.
You know where I've been, man. Ain't no point in me going into all that.
All right, let's don't get into that. Where have you been?
Yeah. Well, I've been health issues I had to deal with, and of course, that's been the main thing. But I'm back 100% now.
You back 100%, ladies and gentlemen. Can we give a big hand for being back 100%?
All right. 95.
Okay.
Well, you better than most of us, then. Daggone it, I'll take that any day.
I stay better than most.
My bad.
Yeah, good job, guys.
Hey, Leon.
That was a great talk for Joseph. Yes, sir.
What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna log in on another phone line.
Uh huh.
Cause this phone here about to go dead. So I'm gonna come in on my office number.
Okay, bro. Appreciate it.
Do you hear me?
While you're doing that, while we're doing that, we're gonna do a little roundtable right quick. Now, like I say, my name is Leon Gatewood. I'm the 11th child of Dr. and Mrs. Wade H. Gatewood from here in Waynesboro, North Carolina. There are 14 children in our family, and we try to do our best to carry out our parents' legacy. Our parents had a strong legacy of love and respect, and we'll try our best to carry the legacy out. So, like I said, I'm child number 11, and I'll be your host for the evening. We have a lot of things we want to talk about this evening, so we're going to move forward in just a little bit. But I do want to go ahead and get Robert to kind of, since I'm in his chair, I would like to hear what he has to say about himself tonight. Other than he's missing being in his chair.
Hey, I want my chair back. Hey, Leon. Yeah, I'm taking it pretty hard, man. All right. I'm okay.
Get over it, dude.
I'm fine. Okay, I'm back. All right, back. All right, thank you, Leon, for hosting tonight. Appreciate everything you're doing in the community, and I just want to introduce myself. I'm Robert Gatewood. I'm the 10th child of Reverend Dr. W.H. Gatewood and Miss Geneva Getty Gatewood. By profession, I'm a business developer up in the Washington, D.C. area. I've been doing that for the last almost. I went to Livingstone College, got a degree in political science and pre-law, and now I have an MBA degree, and I work in the marketing and business development arena. I have a couple of books called Played in Full and Smarter Than the Boss. I'm also an adjunct professor at Livingstone, Prince George's College up in the D.C. area. I love my family up here and family down there, wherever my family may be. I believe family is the key to survival, and it really what makes us a whole person. So just glad to be here tonight. Thank you, brother.
Rob, that was beautiful, man. You said some stuff I hadn't heard in a while about the books and stuff. That's good stuff, man. That's good stuff.
Hey, man, I be trying, man.
Proud of you. Hey, Joseph, I see you're back, man.
I don't think Joseph's back yet.
He's back. I need to turn him on. Hey, Joseph, I see you're back, man.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We're doing our roundtable.
Leon.
Yes, sir. Introduce yourself to the people.
Okay, I'm Joseph Gatewood. I'm the 8th child, commonly referred to as the 8th gate. But I graduated from North Carolina Central University with concentrations in history and political science. Presently, I am owner and operator of Gatewood Financial, where we sell insurance and real estate. I have been in, had this business going since 1997.
Mm.
We are active in the community as well as with North Carolina Central University. Like Leon said, we are trying to carry out the legacy of Dr. Wade H. Gatewood and Mother Geneva Gatewood. They both, for a long time, were and continue to be pillars in our community, and we're proud of them and the example that they set for us. And hopefully through venues like this, we can share some of the experiences that we had in life that we feel that made us stronger and better individuals.
That was beautiful, Joseph. That was beautiful. Where's my teacher, Tito?
That was beautiful, man. I'm almost speechless, man. I don't know what to say right now. But anyway, speaking of love, you heard the song that we have playing our intro song every week so far. It's been Where's the Love by the Black Eyed Peas. They're asking, where is the love? And one of the things we're going to be discussing this evening is, where is the love in our community? Where is the love, man? We got a lot of stuff to talk about. But I'm going to, before we get started, I want to give a shout out to my Aunt Aggie. I just got a text from my cousin Judy announcing Aunt Aggie's birthday dinner, her annual birthday dinner, which will be at Quince's in Monroe on January 20th. Hey.
Oh, sorry,
right. All right. Yeah, so we're going to join Aunt Aggie there. We're going to join Aunt Aggie for her birthday party on January 20th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Quince's in Monroe. always a great event, man. Always good to see the people. Always good to see the people coming out. And for
hey,
you guys, yes.
Leon, what date is her birthday?
January 20th.
That's her birthday date? All right.
Now,
yeah,
don't push
right.
me now. That's the celebration day.
All right. You know, man, sometimes.
Man, I just done a little research, but I know that's the date of the celebration.
But you know, sometimes.
I know she, I know her birthday don't come on every Saturday, so that may.
But you
I'm
know, you
got to.
Right.
You got to have these events on the day you can get the spot. You know, you'd be like, sometime it'd be like a month out. Like, wait a minute, you were born 2 months ago. Hey, this was the best date we could get. So, I don't know.
You know, the next thing I have to get is when we can come. You know what I'm saying?
we can come on
Saturday.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to
honey. Happy birthday, honey. Yes, sir. We're really excited
sister.
About that. Also coming up is the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. this month. Of course, January 15th, we'll be doing a big celebration here in Anderson County for Martin Luther King, as they will be doing throughout the state of North Carolina, throughout the country. It is a national holiday, so we'll be celebrating. Now, on Saturday at 10 o'clock, the Hollow Center will be sponsoring our first Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Parade. It's going to be at 10
wow.
o'clock. We're going to go straight to downtown Waynesboro, and we're excited about that. The town is supporting it. The town of Waynesboro is supporting it. The Sheriff's Department is supporting us. So it's going to be a great day. We got a lot of people signing up. We're just excited about that. Like I say, we also like to remind everybody that the Hollow Center did win was awarded one of the Martin Luther King The North Carolina Martin Luther King Jr. Commission grants, one of six organizations in the state to receive that grant. So really excited about that because we have some programs planned throughout the year all the way down to October, which was the month that Dr. Martin Luther King received his Nobel Peace Prize. And for those of us who would like to know, I hate to say this, but this is the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the demise of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So keep all those things in mind. You'll be hearing more and more about the celebrations and commemorations and events that we'll be doing surrounding around Dr. King's legacy throughout the year. All right?
Leon, I remember the night that Dr. King was shot. I was a young kid, but it was so profound and had such a impact on me. I remember going in the bedroom in the dark and laying across the bed and just weeping. I don't even know why I was weeping. I didn't know the guy. I was young, but I knew something terrible had happened, and it had an impact on me. I'm sure just like it did many other people.
I remember exactly where I was that day.
Mm-hmm.
We were at do you remember these Bible classes they used to call the Institute?
Yes.
It was up at First Baptist Church,
mm-hmm.
and we were and it was doing one of these Bible classes. I remember Reverend McCray came in, and he made an announcement. He kind of interrupted the classes that we were in, the assembly. I think we were in assembly at the time. And he said that I have just heard that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Has been shot. He said, I'm hoping that it's not true, but that's what I have heard.
Hmm.
And I remember going home that night in that car with Mom and Daddy. And the only thing I could remember is I just kept saying, I remember 1968, and I was 15 years old. And I just remember being in that car, and that was a long ride home because, of course, you know, you couldn't get on the radio. We didn't have cell phones and Google and all that. And I'm just saying, I hope when we get home and turn this TV on, that is not true. And sure enough, as soon as we got home, we turn on the television, and there was Walter Cronkite making the announcement. And it was just like a part of me was just gone.
I think what made it so profound to many of us is that when you have somebody who's really his whole purpose, his whole reason for being was nonviolence and peace and love.
Right.
And to die such a violent death, that was
right.
That caused a cognitive dissonance in many of us. We didn't even know what to call it at the time. We just know we were just confused as heck by what had happened. And it
right.
really it took a psychological toll on the entire community.
Exactly right, it did. And seeing the thing about it, well, a lot of people fail to realize that Dr. Martin Luther King was only 26 years old when he started that movement with Rosa Parks down in Montgomery, Alabama. He was only 26 years old.
26. Wow.
And when he died, he was only 39.
Hmm.
39 years old, you know. So look around us and see what a lot of, you know, what we were doing at age 26, at age 39, and even now.
Mm-hmm.
I just got enough food.
He was a young man. He was a young man. And another thing people fail to realize, too, is that his ministry was not a very long ministry. From age, it was only 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
13 years. That's how long Dr. Martin Luther King was actually on the scene. 13 years.
It was an amazing
person. That's about like what it, the time it takes to go through high school and 1 year in college. Put that in perspective.
That's an amazing brother, man.
That was amazing brother.
Well, I think it's a commentary that makes all of us kind of look in the mirror and take stock of what we've done and what we have yet to do as human beings in general, and as fighters, soldiers for our people in particular, that we, as long as we have breath in us, we need to be out here fighting, because this young guy did everything he could within this short period of time. And there were a lot of people who didn't give Dr. King his due props. Many people thought he was too mild. He wasn't radical enough. But when you look at some of the scenes of him being arrested, hit upside the head, locked up, and, I mean, it's easy to say that in hindsight. Some people say, well, look, if I was around then, they wouldn't have done that to me. Well, hell, you're around now. What are you doing? You're doing that and more to you now.
That's right. You're being abused even more now.
That's right. So I don't want to hear that.
Speaking of standing up, fighting, what about this thing with the worldwide apparel retailer, H&M? We just issued an apology and vowed to review their internal policies on diversity. And included after controversy erupted over a page on their website promoting a hoodie with the slogan, "Coolest monkey in the jungle," was the model of the young black boy.
Well,
now,
did you see that one, Joe?
No, I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah, I can give you my quick perspective. It was actually, it's a funny story. It's not a funny story, but that's a shop where my daughter shops regularly. There was a shop up here in the D.C. area, and one day I came home with a polka dotted shirt, and I said, "Man, I found this cool store called H&M." Of course, my daughter, your children don't want to do anything related to what your parents do. So my daughter disowned me for an entire year after, because I went into her store. She wanted nothing to do with me or my shirt. So
yeah.
So the minute I heard about the story, I had to find her and say, "Hey, you hear about this?" She said, "Yeah, we decided to boycott." Because, and that's two things. It just lets you know these kids are really, they're all very aware, because it's, you know, it's big in social media right now. But it goes back to Leon and Joe. This is what, and Joe, just like Leon said, these guys put on their website, a young black guy, like a guy about 10 or 12 years old with a hoodie on, sweatshirt they were selling. And then the blazing on the front of it was, "I'm the coolest monkey in the jungle." And it had a little white guy on the opposite page. He's got on like a shirt, something about warrior or something. But it was nothing similar to what the black guy had on. And, of course, the H&M kind of apologized. They go through their whole little apologizing ritual. But it speaks to the fact that if you don't have the diversity in these boardrooms, but it was such a failure on so many levels. It was a failure of the photographer, the stylist, the web designer, the marketing director, the whoever the overseer is. And I hope the parent didn't see this, and the parents approved of it. So okay. That was just a failure across the board.
You're getting where I want to go now with the you're getting where I want to go now with the parent situation there. Now, that's where we're going to have to get stronger in our community. When I say that, I'm saying because now, like you just said, you named a lot of people who could take responsibility for this. But shouldn't the parent have, should it have offended the parent? Then, I've had this discussion with people around, before I came on the air. A lot of people saying, well, what if the parent was paid a lot of money for their child to do that? I mean, we don't know the situation. We don't know the circumstances of that parent or in that parent household. But shouldn't the parent have really been the one to speak up loudest? All right, hold up. I got another question. Could she have been possibly tied, or he or she or the parents, couldn't they have possibly been tied up in a contract where they had to wear it?
No. Okay. I don't think nobody can tie you into a contract that's going to make a fool out of you and then hold up in court.
Right.
Okay.
I mean,
I've seen a lot of people made fools out of in contracts.
Yeah. Well, like I said, because we got a lot of people up there, in Washington that are being made fools out of right now. So I guess you make a point, but I guess a lot of times, if you're gonna be a fool, you just don't be a fool for free. Maybe they got paid to be a fool. I don't know. But I would hope that you wouldn't be that big a fool for free.
Well, I think that parents come in all different shapes, stripes, mindsets. Just because you are you're able to produce progeny and give birth or sperm birth or provide the sperm for birth doesn't necessarily make you a good parent. And I'm not one to sit here and pat myself on the back and say I'm a perfect parent. But I do know that for a fact that some parents, they have other priorities other than the raising up of a very mindful and thoughtful and polite and well-educated children. And I think that's a challenge. I think that's the reasons are many. A lot of it's systemic racism, just never been introduced to things. And I don't like to make excuses, but I know it's not as easy and as black as white is to say, well, this parent should have known better. I don't know, like I said, I don't know the situation here, but everything seemed to point back to this systemic racism in this country that just puts black people constantly in these compromising positions that they have to do things that they might not have done otherwise for money.
I understand that. I can certainly understand that part. And here's another thing that confuses me about this situation with the company. Now, like you said, how it got past all these people you named earlier, the web designer and all these guys, and the PR person, I know they got PR groups and people that review these types of ads. Then somebody say, hey, man, we're probably getting ready to get boycotted. Channing them getting ready to boycott us, man, some of our favorite customers. When you'd have thought that would have happened?
Well, The quick and easy answer is that it was a mistake and nobody saw it. And it's in the Monday morning quarterbacking that this, as a society we are often to do, that it seems clear, crystal clear in hindsight. But it's crystal clear enough. It did not have to be in hindsight for people of color because of the history associated with people calling African Americans descendants of apes. And so there's a long story in history there. But if you don't have that diversity in the boardroom where somebody would say, hey, wait a minute. Now, unfortunately, Leon and Joe, sometimes those people in that boardroom, they are just so happy to get a daggone job Ada, look, I'm not going to rock the boat here. Uh-uh. I'm getting paid too well. That's a serious problem that you would. I just hope that because you know what they'll do? They're going to find a black person. They're going to say, look, hey, he was in the room with us. Guess what? Give it a couple of days. They'll go dig somebody up. Oh, here's the guy. Take this guy with the mop, put a necktie on him, and say he was part of the marketing department. But somehow this is going to end up reflecting badly back on either the parents or some black person at the company. Just give it time. Just give it enough time.
Yeah, I agree.
So here's another issue that's pressing our community. Let's talk about education for a second. Okay. Now, Holler Center is in Anson County. One of our primary focuses is education. We keep up with the data. We know what's going on to a large extent with a lot of the schools and how many kids are achieving and all that stuff. I don't think people still get it that only about 3 out of 10 black kids are reading on grade level. I don't think people are taking it seriously enough. And once you start seeing the prisons fill up, you understand why the prisons are filling up, because those two things kind of run parallel to each other. Now, here's another issue I don't think people are understanding. You know, prisoners are paying about, they're getting charged about these days, some started back in Alabama about 40 years ago called pay to stay, and it's picked up and now about 43 states throughout the United States have picked this thing up. These guys are paying $50 a day to stay. Okay. Now here's the way they're coming up with the money, or having to come up with the money is an issue, because they make cheap labor. So it's the slavery issue coming back on us again.
Who's paying the $50? The prisoners?
Who's paying it?
Yeah, who's paying the $50?
I mean, they have to work to pay that money. Look, if they leave prison without finding a way to pay that bill before they leave prison, they come out with a bill.
It's like going to college.
Yeah, like going to college. Yeah, the average guy that's coming out of prison comes out on about $30,000.
Well, I tell them, you can, exactly. As long as I owe you, never go broke.
I tell them,
put it on my credit, because.
But Joe,
I really don't have no credit, no way.
Well, what you're saying, Joe, is what I'm sure is part of the system is that now they're locked into a system where they have a criminal record. Now they also can't go out and get any credit because now they have bad credit. And I would say give them about 3 or 4 months, and they're going to be right back in there paying that $50 again. But we know that's part of the plan, though.
Right.
Because what's happening is a lot of the local industries and stuff like that making partnership with these privatized prisons for cheap labor.
It's like I made a point at a group that I spoke to several years ago. Emerging Leaders. It's a group in Charlotte, where it's like a mentor group for up-and-coming young African-Americans. And I spoke to the group, and I made a point. I said, if we have more black men in prison now than there were black men in slavery. And a lot of people say, well, that's only because there are more people now. That is true, but the numbers are still there.
Right.
So these privatized prisons, and of course, all these little, slapping all these little petty crimes on young African Americans is just a way to keep these privatized prisons going. Because these guys are not just sitting around in prison; they're working.
They're working. Mm-hmm. Here's where I'm going with this. Here's where I'm going.
They're working. It's basically just slavery all over again.
And here's where I'm going with this. When do we catch on? Why are we so slow? Why are we as a race of people so slow to catch on? Okay, yeah, they got the trap set. So,
right.
I mean, even a fish, you keep throwing the same bait to a fish, he's going to catch on eventually.
That's right. That's why you keep changing up.
Why are we so slow?
Leon, right. I'm gonna tell you why. The analogy about the fish was a good one, because the people that are pushing this prison industrial complex, they are changing the bait, because things that are criminalized now were not criminalized in years prior.
That's true.
So now things like credit, you can now be locked up for not paying your bills. You can be locked up for speeding. You can be locked up for speed camera violations. These traps, they're moving the goalposts. So if you have a system that is hell-bent on incarcerating people in mass quantities, you know, mass incarceration, if that's your goal, then the minute you change the people that are being incarcerated, once they catch on, you will find another bait that's going to lure them. Because back during the Ronald Reagan's and the war on drugs, it was known, it was actually, and there was documentation to prove that they were a concentrated effort to lock up hippies and black people. And they say the best way to do that is to go after places where they have disproportionate numbers, and that was in drugs. And so that was an effort. Now, once people start saying, wait, let's catch on. Now, this drug thing is not a good thing. Plus, they locked up about everybody who was using drugs. There was nobody else to lock up. So they have to find some more crimes. Let's start going after people who are not paying their student loans. Let's go after people who are speeding. And so it becomes more difficult. Go ahead.
Are you telling me you can go to jail for not paying your bills?
Oh, yeah.
You can't go to jail for not paying a bill.
I'm gravely concerned about that.
I mean, they wouldn't have enough jails.
Joseph. This is not.
But what I'm saying now, I'm not saying that they won't do it, but constitutionally they cannot do it.
Because they tied to something else.
Exactly right. But just like the point that I have made a lot of times, anytime I get a forum, I say this: if the Constitution of the United States was applied the way it's supposed to be applied, there will probably be nobody in prisons. Seriously, there will be nobody in prisons. Most of these guys that are in prison, their rights were violated somewhere along the line in the criminal justice system. Somewhere along the line, I'm gonna give you a good example that came home to us this week. Now, my granddaughter, the cop pulled her over for following too closely. That's what he pulled over for. And of course, now she doesn't understand. She doesn't understand the Fourth Amendment that says, you know, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. You know, where it says that, you know, there should be no illegal search and seizure. You can't search somebody's car unless you get a warrant to do so, or if there's probable cause, or if you give them permission. So the police pulled her over, and for following too closely, and asked her, could he search her car? And when he searched her car, he found a kitchen knife. And do you know he wrote her charge her with carrying a concealed weapon because there was a kitchen knife in the car? And of course, carrying a concealed weapon in North Carolina is a Class 2 misdemeanor. And a Class 2 misdemeanor in North Carolina can get you up to 60 days in jail and a $1,000 fine.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the black eye, you got a criminal record.
Right, so you, I think.
I mean, because what I'm saying is, this is the kind of stuff that these guys do all the time. But I'm going to be the one to let them know they don't pull the wrong one. Because you know, a lot of times, you know, they do stuff like that, and it just kind of, you know, goes ignored because you know, they figure like, whoever it is, they can't afford an attorney. They don't know their rights. Huh? Go ahead.
Joe, you've gotten where I want to go with this now. Advocacy, parental or guardian advocacy for young people. That's got to be important. That's going to be important moving forward for us to keep our young people safe, keep them out of prison, keep them in school, because they're getting kicked out of school by the hundreds. I mean, all over the country, just kicked out of school.
And
a lot of it has to do with the lack of advocacy without somebody speaking up for them. Where are we?
And I would like to see some of these people in law enforcement start stepping up more. Because, you know, we're talking about who paid this kid to wear this suit, the coolest monkey in the jungle. You know, what about some of these judges and DAs and these police conspicuously quiet when black people are mistreated or their rights are violated? And they're in a position right then to say something and do something and stop it.
Right, right.
But they are more concerned about their position, their job, than they are about speaking up for what's right. So, We got problems at a lot of levels.
Robert,
sound like.
Can we take a quick break and I'm gonna give out the phone number right quick for people to call in and join us. I hope somebody will call in and join us, share some information with us. The number to call in is 646-787-1967. That is 646-787-1967. And Robert, if you give us a little something, we're going to slide out for about a few seconds and take a quick break, man.
Oh. Wait. Hold on there, brother.
I got a little something here. I see you did come up.
Caught me sleep over here, man.
The holes in my shoes would leak. At least I had shoes on my feet.
What a mighty God we serve. What a mighty God we serve. Angels bow before him. Heaven and earth adore him. What a mighty God we serve.
All right. I'd like to welcome everybody back to the show. We're having a very good discussion this evening on what we can do to help ourselves. And there's a lot we can do. Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay.
There's a lot we can do. Come in on the song that one of you for the mighty God we serve.
Uh-huh.
You know, that part in the song that said we didn't have Pepsi, we had sugar water, we didn't have Pepsi.
Yes.
One guy in the neighborhood told me, man, what you mean? Y'all had a store. y'all selling
matter of fact.
Anyway, go ahead, man.
Hey, matter of fact, we did have a store, but that was before the store.
Okay.
And there was a little period after the store that some of the younger kids, like Curtis and Leon, I think you all came after the store, didn't you?
Yeah, I think they did. Because, matter of fact, I think the store closed down. We ate it up. It lasted
a
good
store
while.
Our store was basically a big pantry.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
We go through there all through the night. Go ahead and get me a can of salmon.
Yeah, cook some salmon for breakfast.
And Bunker Hill beef, man. They still make that.
Bunker Hill beef.
Hey, that breakfast sausage that came in the can.
Yeah. That breakfast sausage and Bunker Hill beef. Man, you pour that over some rice. Good Lord have mercy.
We go on the store up at 7 o'clock in the morning, go in there and get something for breakfast, bring it in there and put it on, then can count for it. And that, yes, it's ate it, whatever.
And every now and then, you know those weird guys, every now and then a customer would wander through the place, and we look at them like they came from the moon. Wait a minute, what you want? What you doing at our house? Oh, that's right, I forgot this was a store, my bad. Oh boy.
But check this out, guys. I wanted to read something to you right quick. I'm sure you guys know this, but it reflects on what's going on right now, okay? Now, passed by Congress on January 31st, 1865, and ratified on December 6, 1865, the 13th Amendment abolished slavery in the United States and provides that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted shall exist within the United States or any place subject to that jurisdiction. So if we need to really have a serious wake-up call for our community to get them to understand that slavery is now and it's legal.
That's right.
Slavery is now and it's legal. So we really got to work this community, man. We really got to work our community. We really got to step up on our legacy. We really got to step up. We want to get more people motivated to step up, more people conscious of what's going on in our very own community. What was that?
Yeah.
Well, Michelle Alexander wrote a book that I think should be required reading called The New Jim Crow. And she very articulately explained the system of oppression, supremacy, and that slavery did not end with the 13th Amendment. Somebody got to mute somebody over there. So there's been a shift. There's been a shift. And I keep going back to this parallel that we have to recenter ourselves, because it's like a magician pull a trick on you. You look at one hand, you figure you found the thing that he hid, but it pops up out of his sleeve or from behind your ear. Well, that's what's happening with this institutionalization of African American people. Of course they don't put a chain around your neck and put you in the hull of a ship. But we have symbolic chains around necks. We have symbolic hulls of ships. There was in Africa, in Senegal, there was this big stately place. They call it can't think of the name of it right off the bat, but it was a place where Africans would come. They would go out in the field and enslave Africans and put them on this stately looking place at the front. But out the back of it, it led right down to the ships in the ocean. And that's sort of like a symbolic symbolism of how the penal system is now. You look at a courthouse, you got these great big posts out front. They got these nice marble floors. They got this people walking around in suits. But out the back door, they're not putting them on ships, but they're putting them in these God-forbidden, awful institutions, where people are being beaten, they're being raped, they're being charged for crimes they didn't commit. This is not slavery by 1860 standards, but it's just as debilitating, it's just as damaging, and it's just as hurtful to our community, and we should fight it just as hard as people fought back then to abolish it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What's on your mind, Joseph? I hear you thinking.
Well, basically,
what's on your mind, Joseph? I hear you thinking, man.
I was thinking about what this guy said said on the news the other night. He quoted Napoleon, and I'm not going. I'm sure I can't quote it verbatim, but basically what he said was, Napoleon once said, "Don't bother your enemy if he is destroying himself." So basically when we see, you know, crime in our communities and it seems like it goes unchecked, this is a systematic way of allowing us to destroy ourselves. You know, and for the most part, they're not going to bother us as long as we're destroying ourselves. So, and it goes back to what I've been saying forever. We got, because you start out this show talking about love. we have to start showing more love for ourselves. And because if we could come together as a community, there's no power on earth that can do these things to us. But as long as we got guys out here that's going to still try to do little petty stuff, selling drugs to one another, and it's petty crime, but most of the time when we're doing it, we're doing it against ourselves. So we got to find a way to bring an end to that. Because if we don't, we're going to keep. I went and pulled the stats on just about every major city in the United States. And in every major city, most of the murders, we know where they occur. Where do they occur? Huh?
In my neighborhood.
In my neighborhood. In our neighborhood. And for the most part, I looked down and I said, well, if it wasn't for us killing each other, I said, most of these cities wouldn't even need a police department.
At what point are
we just going to start a serious national movement against us destroying ourselves and our enemies sitting back looking at it? Just like some guy said one time, he said, we putting the Klan out of business.
And Joseph, you're going where I want to go in this conversation now. You're going where I want to go. And that is, where do we step up? When do we step up? How do we wake our people up? What do we need to do? I mean, we have all the bad statistics. So where do we wake up? I mean, I'm a community activist, right?
Yeah, you're
doing
a good job.
So much community action going on in my community, we're running all over ourselves. But nobody seems to be listening but the community activists.
That's right.
So how do we get the attention? Our number to call in is 646-787-1967. I wish somebody would call in and talk to us. 646-787-1967. So where do we do this? We have no money in the bank. We got a lot of Mexicans and everybody. We have least money in 401ks. When are we going to catch on?
They won't.
And the thing about it, just like take something like the business I'm in, okay? Now, as many cars as we drive, and all of us, for the most part, we have a house, and we all got a life. Why can't African-American insurance agencies, I'm not talking about the State Farms and the all states and the Nationwide, but I'm talking about independent insurance men. Why do we have such a hard time?
Why? You mean why you have such a hard time staying in business?
Yeah.
You mean why you don't get any black customers?
Right.
I got you. Well, that's where you're going in this conversation, where I want to go now.
What point are we going to wake up and look
at out there listening has an answer. Joe,
hey,
let me
throw a 2 cents in here. I think there's a two-prong approach. First, I think there has to be personal responsibility, and that is, I think that's that elephant in the room, that there needs to be more of that. But I think simultaneously on a parallel front, we have to look at policy, because policy is what it's going to take to fight against the system. You can be the most responsible person in the world, as we've seen with people like Eric Garner and Trayvon Martin and these other guys however checkered their past were, it wasn't worth being shot in the street. So there's a system at work. Neely Fuller, another author I suggest anybody to read, he wrote The Racist Code and talks about the 9 areas where racism can infiltrate our lives. He said that there are two ways that that the racists and the supremacists can control you with a gun. They stand over you with a gun and a whip or a knife or some type of weapon to keep you in line, or through deception. And that's through racism, that's through trickery, that's through bias, that's through all other types of forms of mind control. Well, eventually they get tired of standing over you with a gun and a whip. They say, that's too much work. So what they do, they use the deception, and then they can go off and go to sleep because now you're going to be self-regulating. And I think that's what's happening. That's why we have a lot of turmoil in the community. A lot of people are fighting against each other. But do know this, that our community is not the only community that has people fighting each other. Black-on-black crime has been exaggerated because people tend to kill whoever they're around. So there's white-on-white crime, there's Hispanic-on-Hispanic crime. People kill who they're around the most. That does not excuse or exempt us from tackling it. We don't have to do what other people do.
Here's my thing, Robert. Somebody please call in 646-787-1967. Here's my thing, Robert. My statement is, okay, Joseph's over there, he has that black insurance company. Then you have black restaurants that can't stay open. Everybody that can afford to do it. We can't afford not to support each other. You know what I mean? There are not enough of us. We can't say, I'm going to quit going to Joseph. Then you go around the corner, there's nobody else to go to.
That's right.
So we have to continue to build each other up, and we're having a real problem with that as a people. We're having a real problem with that. We come in our establishments, and we start looking for a reason not to come back instead of a reason to support. I've seen it happen. People come in your place, they look for a reason not to come back instead of looking for a reason to continue to support you. That's not good. So we really have to pray over this. We really have to work with each other. We really got to learn to love each other. We got to find a way to support each other. Even if it makes your stomach hurt, we need to find a way to support each other. We need to get ourselves out of this rut we're in, because until we learn to love and support and respect each other, nobody else will. The reason they beat our kids up, the reason they feel it's okay to shoot our kids, because they don't think we give a flip about them. They don't think we care about our kids.
You know what, Leon, what I think about often is that we tend to glorify the days of when there was Black Wall Street, there was Tulsa and places like that. And people say, wow, we really had it together back then. But really back then it was out of necessity. I think we didn't have a choice. Now we have so many choices. I think that we make it too easy not to support each other. I'm gonna tell you the truth. I bank at a black bank. And it is a sacrifice. I'm just going to tell you. There's Bank America, there's all the Capital One. I mean, I can't walk out the door without running into one of them. But I make a conscious decision to drive an extra 5 miles. This black bank doesn't have an app for business accounts, so I'm inconvenienced. But until we as people are, you have to do it till it hurts. It has to hurt. It can't be that convenient. You can't just say, well, because I'm going to save a penny or an ounce of gas by not driving that extra mile. We have to be able to sacrifice it. The people that in the Montgomery bus boycott, this boycott went on for a year. People think this was something that happened in like a couple of weeks. This thing went on over a year.
Year.
Until we were ready to make that kind of sacrifice in 2018, the needle is not going to move.
That's deep. But
that's
true.
Rough. That's rough there.
That's deep.
Never interfere with an enemy. Never interfere with an enemy while he's in the process of destroying himself. That's the exact quote. Never interfere with an enemy while he's in the process of destroying himself. So basically, we have to be the one to interfere with a lot of the behavior that's going on in our community. Like Robert said, you have to make a sacrifice And I'm going to tell you somebody who does make those sacrifices, the Hispanic.
When I first
opened my insurance office in 1997, I used to have Hispanics come to my office in the droves, literally in the droves. I mean, they were, because, you know, there weren't any Hispanic insurance agencies. And there was another brother that had an insurance office, and he basically just changed his marketing strategy, you know, just to attract Hispanic customers. And I said I was not going to do that. And one of my colleagues asked me why. I said the reason I'm not going to do that is because I know as soon as one Hispanic gets an insurance license and he opens an insurance office, they're all going to go there. And I said that's no discredit to them. I said, but that's what we should be doing. And sure enough, the brother that was making a lot of money in the Hispanic community, a Hispanic got an insurance license, and he put an office beside his office and shut him down. But I said, but I'm not upset with them. Because they're doing what we should know how to do. That's why right now in the United States, here again, all these years we don't manage to get. I know there are forces out here that get us to behave this way. But like Leon said earlier, at some point we need to catch on.
Right.
At some point we need to catch on. But every time we end up at the bottom of the totem pole, just like, you know, when the Hispanics first got here, everybody was laughing about somebody driving hoopers and all this kind of stuff. These guys now got banks, they got bus lines, they got grocery stores, convenience stores. I mean, they're taking over whole communities, and the way they are doing it is because they're supporting each other.
Gentlemen, gentlemen. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Alex. How you doing, man?
I'm doing
well, good. I've been listening
to the brother.
What's up, Alex?
It's all good, man. The conversation is very enlightening. And I've been listening to the brothers, and what I've discovered from the conversation, I've only been on the line for a few minutes, but, you know, there are movements out here that are geared toward everything you guys have been discussing tonight. There's a movement called Black, Buy Black the Community, Buy Back the Block. And the organizers of this movement are going into their various communities. They're buying up real estate. They're buying grocery stores. They're buying sneaker companies. They're producing instead of being consumers. Of course, the other persuasions and the other economic powers of the world, they study our behaviors. They find out what we drink. They find out what we smoke. And then they bump our community, whether it be good or bad. So there are forces out there. The ancestors has already laid out a plan for us about cooperative economics, supporting Black businesses, buying up our community. And until we do that, until we start buying up our community is not going to change. There's going to be gentrification. Wow. There are going to be other people coming in our community, buying up our old abandoned buildings and pricing our people out of our neighborhoods. So there's so many forces that are, you know, that are affecting us. What we need to do is galvanize like-minded people, organizations and people who are really moving. And there are lots of organizations, there are lots of individuals out there, Black banks, Black grocery stores. They're up and coming. So I urge you guys to find out where those organizations are.
Well, I would say to you, Alex, that's people like yourself who are in the know, to have your pulse, hand on the pulse. We need you in this fight, man, to help us get this information out. Share it on your social media sites. Like, if you see something like that, put it on the Brothers For Real. Put it on the sites that we frequent, and let's make it go viral, because this is good information. This really, it just, more people just need to get their hands on it. So I appreciate you putting it on the show tonight.
Absolutely. We spend a lot of time concentrating on our ills. We need to spend more time concentrating on things that are actually in motion, ways that we can get involved And sometimes people get a misconception, I got to have a lot of money, I got to have good credit. Of course, those things help, but the most important thing is the willpower and the conviction. So I commend the brothers, man. It starts with dialogue, having a dialogue, like this. And before you know it, we'll find some common ground.
We'll find some more Alexes. That's what we're going to do. All right.
Exactly.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff.
So what we try to do here is cultivate our minds to get our minds right. One of the biggest issues is, and it's like that with the school system, one of the things we try to do is get people's minds right, because I don't care if you got the best school system in the country, in your community, if minds aren't right.
That's right.
They're not going to take advantage of it. So it's important that we continue to try to cultivate people's minds and get their minds ready to accept those things that Alex is talking about. It's important that we get our minds right to accept the things that the school systems in our communities offer. We have some Anson County schools. I don't have any. Only complaint I have about Anson County schools is that we're not taking advantage of some of the things that they are offering.
Right.
Now, that's going to make somebody sick out there in radio land.
Right.
That's one of the biggest issues. We have, let's take D'Angelo Gatewood, for instance. He came up in the Anson County school system. That guy got a full ride to Carolina. And I'm going to stop right there. He took advantage of what was being
offered. What was available.
Right.
Exactly. Get
down his bucket where he was.
I'm continuing to fight. We have somebody calling in here?
Yes, another caller.
Okay, I'm responding to Leon. I work in the school system, and until we get the parents to do what they need to do at home, they want to send their children to school and not read to them, not help them do their homework.
Right.
They want to do all this thing and leave it up to the school system to teach their children. But that is not – it starts at home first. And then that's where it's gone. And if I'm with children that can't read, but we tell the parents, until you are present in your child's life,
right,
they are not going to do it. It got to come from the home first.
That's right.
They got to put time out to read with you. I'm working from kindergarten for fifth grade, which you need. That's where they need their reading and all of that. Until parents realize, and see, we got children having children, and they are just expecting you to do everything for them. You got grandparents that's 20 years old, and see, they are not teaching. Until we get a handle on children having children and be able to teach our children at home.
Let's stop right there for a second. Do you have, because we're about to run out of time, do you have any suggestions on how we can better reach parents, how we can get open up this dialogue, any ideas on some ideas we can bring into the community, or get some ways to motivate parents to get involved?
Yeah, I'm thinking if we can get them in church and get programs started, because anything free, they're gonna bombard it. Anything free, they're gonna bombard it because it's getting to them free. Because the service that I leave one school system and go to another school system is free, and we got parents on waiting list trying to get in, and we're trying to teach them. You got to have a present in your child's life. You got to read to them. You got to do this thing so they won't get in the system. Until you realize that if they can't read and write, they're going to go rob. They're going to go sell drugs. They're going to go do what they can because they don't have the education. They can't read to get a job. And we're trying to teach them until I'm thinking it start. We get a program in the church to start teaching these young teenagers that are having children, and they don't know what to do.
And one more thing, the problem is generational. you have four or five generations of illiteracy. And then you send those, that four or five generations, that fifth generation into the school system, and the parents are illiterate. So it's very clinical. It's an epidemic. So I don't have the, I mean, I'm looking for, that's where the problem lies. Poverty, illiteracy, and generational illiteracy is one of the biggest driver of low performance that you can find out here.
Hey, guys, let me add something. I think what the caller just said is it's so important that the parents have to take a bigger role, because one of the biggest mistakes, and I think one of the biggest challenges we've had is as in the education system, is that we've let the oppressor train our children.
That's right.
And you cannot turn that responsibility over to somebody who's oppressing you, which means the parents have to be more vigilant and step up and send that kid to school with a coat of armor of self-assuredness, of education, of ancestry, and pride. So, caller, you are 100% right.
Let me give you a good example of what you just said. And there's a lady, a good friend of mine. She sent two of her kids to inner-city schools, and everybody was telling her she needed to move in order to put her kids in a better school. And her response was that it does not matter what they do at the school system. What's going to be more important is what I do at home with my kids when I send them to school. And her son became one of the youngest PhDs in the country at age 26, and her other daughter went to a prestigious law school on a full scholarship, and now she's working for a prestigious law firm in the country. Out of inner-city schools, and that was because of the attitude she took with taking care of her kids at home and not depending on the school system to do it.
Amen, brother.
That's because their parent was literate. The problem
the parent
is
was literate. You're right. You make a good point. The parent was literate. The parent was an educated parent.
The problem is the parents aren't literate. That's where you're going to find most
but
of your...
The problem is, too, you got a lot of parents where they are literate and they are abandoning the community. Where these people are literate could actually stay in the community and actually be a resource. We got a lot of problems at a lot of different levels.
Absolutely.
I think that's important. I think it's important that we have an organization like Leon had, like his organization. We have to support these organizations. And like Alex said, every parent, we can't assume that every household has two parents with college degrees. That's fairy tale. So that means the people that have the means and the wherewithal have to step up and fill that void.
That's right. The village.
Take the village.
That's right.
Take the village. There you go.
Man,
this is great stuff. Great stuff, guys.
Robert, we're going to about run out of time here. Here's what I want to say before we shut down, though. We're going to come back with solutions next week. We need people to call in with ideas on solutions on how to deal with our issues. We don't want to just talk about issues and not come up with solutions. So that's what we're asking people to do. Thank you for calling in, Alex. Thank you for calling in, school person. Thank you for calling in with some information on how we can start addressing some of the issues that are plaguing our community. So what we'd like to do is, like I say, when we come back next week, we're going to have some more discussion, and we're going to have some more solutions to our situation. I think we're out of here tonight.
Don't you know that it's time to get on board and let this